This episode of Weed Like a Word was recorded via social media during lockdown conditions in the 2020 coronavirus epidemic. Consequently, the sound quality is a bit ropey at times, and so indeed is the quality of the presenters. But nevertheless, enjoy the show.
We'd like a word
about how trauma can shape stories. You're listening to We'd Like a Word with me, Paul Waters.
And me, Stephen Colton.
And our guests this time are writer Jeff Gudgeon, who's author of Saxon's Bane, and his new book is called Draca. And we're also joined by the former head of the General Staff, the guy who ruled the British Army, General Sir Peter Wall. Hello.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Steve. Good to meet you.
And hello, Jeff.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Steve. And hello, Peter.
I think our first question should be, we're not used to being in such exalted company, what we should call you. Is generalissimo the right term? Or
no,
what
I
would
think
you like?
Peter's what we should be called over here.
Okay, we'll settle for Peter then. Except for Jeff, I think Jeff should call you Sir, because Jeff is a veteran too.
I shall sit to attention.
That sounds wrong. But anyway, just to explain why we're here, Jeff, obviously we're a books and writers podcast, and Jeff is the author of two books, and well, more than two, but the two long novels, Saxon's Bane and Draca, the new one that's just out. And Peter, General Sir Peter Wall, is President of Combat Stress, which helps veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder and other kinds of trauma. And I suppose, Jeff, maybe you should tell us a bit about Draca to begin with.
Draca is the story of a war hero who's haunted by his past, or maybe just haunted. The plot is based around the tensions between three main characters. There's Drac, the flawed hero, who tries to rebuild his life by restoring an old sailing boat, but who seems to be on a mission to self-destruct. Second character is his very controlling father, who's pushing him ever closer to the edge. And the third one is George, a local yachtswoman who gives her all to pull him back. To her, Jack's obsession with his boat becomes possession, and the boat owns the man. So if you had to put a label on it, I'm not keen on putting labels on books, but I'd probably go for psychological thriller with a very subtle supernatural twist.
And Draca is the name of the boat which may be haunted.
Draca is the name of the boat, yes.
Okay.
Because the character is a war veteran with PTSD, I'm sharing the royalties with Combat Stress.
You were in the Royal Navy yourself, Jeff.
Yes.
So this is about a soldier, though. The main character is a soldier, so it's not you.
The Royal Marine. Royal Marine.
A Royal Marine, okay. So we've read the book. We've read both your books, Jeff. But let's ask Peter what he thinks of it. You've read Draca as well. What do you make of it?
Well, I came to read Draca because someone in Combat Stress asked me if I would write a sort of reference for the book to go on the cover. And I was either too disorganized or too busy to meet Jeff's timeline. And so I left myself with not very long to apprise myself of the book and, you know, answer the exam question. And I thought, well, I can probably blag this. I can probably skim through it, and I wasn't really sure what it was about or what the project was about or anything like that. And I got completely sucked in, and I read it in the space of about 36 hours on and off. What I loved about it was I liked the kind of nautical theme, because I'm a very amateur, I stress very amateur, sailor. I was obviously interested in the slightly haunted dimension that's just referred to of Jack, this decorated Marine who'd had shocking experiences in Afghanistan and obviously been extremely courageous. And so put all that together, it's a very, very compelling read. It's quite a troubling read too, because you realize the obsession with the boat, it stems from Jack's closer allegiance to his grandfather, the former owner of Draka, than he had with his father, whose relationship was diverging. And, you know, the role played by his soon-to-be former wife was also significant here. Enter the listings, Georgia, and you've got another very interesting, driven person, but who gradually, of course, develops an empathy with Jack. So a very compelling read all the way through. I became completely absorbed by it. And I hugely congratulate Jeff for having brought so many themes together in such a cleverly sort of interwoven way. And one is left, you know, from the combat stress perspective, one is left with the view that this is somebody who, in all probability, would benefit hugely from some help. None of these things has expunged the sort of burning need for some sort of medical health treatment. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is for either of you to actually answer. But, I mean, PTSD is a major theme of this book. For the benefit of anyone listening to the podcast who isn't terribly aware of what PTSD is, how would you describe it?
Well, I am clearly not a clinician, but I have got very involved in this both while I was serving and subsequently when I took on the presidency of this charity, which is the one that deals in the military veteran space with the, if you like, top end of mental trauma driven by, frankly, any experience, but mostly in our case, through experiences on military operations. And PTSD, that stands for post-traumatic stress disorder. It inevitably, in some people's minds, carries a stigma. And it's normally not discovered by people sort of wake up in the morning as they would if they kind of broken their leg or cut their hand and saying, oh, I've got PTSD, I better go and see the doc. It normally is discovered in the more extreme cases, sometimes after the event, maybe many, many years. And it's quite often triggered by another event, like a bereavement or some sort of family breakup or some sort of tragedy. And there may be a gradual onset, and very often the worst cases come about when actually people are sort of picked up by the social system, the social care system, perhaps as outcasts, people living on the streets, people with broken families, people who are bankrupt and jobless and destitute, probably with a solvent or alcohol abuse problem. All plays back into, well, maybe the backstory is a mental health challenge. And one of the things that we do know about PTSD is it affects everybody slightly differently. It comes in different levels. I mean, PTSD itself is at the extreme end of the mental injury spectrum, but even then it has sort of categories within it, and complex PTSD is the sort of thing that does the most harm and requires the most effort to generate some sort of recovery, or perhaps in the worst cases, just a managing strategy, because some of these things just don't go away, very sadly. And a lot of people are very loath to bring themselves forward for this sort of treatment, counselling, sort of form of salvation, which if it works can be life-changing for the better, for not only for them, but for their family.
I was really surprised that Combat Stress as an organisation has been going that long, because it seems such a modern approach.
Well, it does have a modern approach, and it's always tried to keep in step with modern mental health medicine. But it started out in the immediate aftermath of the First World War, when the smarter people around were really realising that shell shock wasn't a form of cowardice. The charity was set up then under a slightly different name. I think it was called the British Ex-Servicemen's Mental Health Charity or something like that. And so we've just been through our 100th year. And with that, of course, we tried to have a fundraising campaign, which has been very hard hit by COVID. And one of the interesting trends, which COVID has paradoxically helped, is that it's shifted much more of our treatment pathways onto virtual means, which was a slow-burning trend starting 2 or 3 years ago, but has been hugely accelerated by the inability of people to meet, and particularly people with mental health problems who may have comorbidities, therefore are vulnerable, more vulnerable than the norm to COVID, which is, you know, bad enough anyway. And so this is, paradoxically given a bit of a fillip to more cost-effective and more rapid ways of treating people online. And there was some scepticism amongst the cohort who we have been treating for, in some cases, many years, as to whether this shift going online was just a, cost-cutting, corner-cutting exercise. I think the success of that approach has surprised a lot of people, and it's growing in acceptance. So every cloud has a silver lining. COVID's a pretty huge cloud, but here's one of the potential silver bits.
Indeed. And it's, the other thing is that I don't know whether the public are aware of just how prevalent PTSD is. I mean, I've been doing some work for the Home Office with the police service just recently, and some of the surveys I've been reading within the police service are showing that 1 in 5 police officers suffer from PTSD. There's still a reluctance to come forward because it's a very macho type profession, and blokes aren't very good at talking about what's going on. But 1 in 5 in a policing context, I mean, I don't know how does that relate to military numbers?
Well, it's a very interesting question. So the incidence in the military is lower than that. In fact, it's until quite recent, one of the interesting statistics, which we think may be changing in the millennial generation. But one of the interesting statistics was that even for people who've been on quite intense combat operations, or organizations that have been intense combat operations, the incidence of these type of acute mental health problems was lower than the national norm.
Wow.
Surprising.
Yeah, very.
But that's typically 4 or 5%, 6 or 7%, and the military was below that line. But where these incidences occur in the military population or the ex-military population, they're at the acute end of the experience. So the complex PTSD a much higher proportion. As I said earlier, there is a spectrum of PTSD.
Of course,
within a wider spectrum of mental health challenges that people suffer. And so a lot of other military charities will be dealing more at the lower end, things like solvent abuse and that sort of alcohol abuse, whereas combat stress is quite rightly, because of its resource challenges, focused on what only it can do, which is the more sort of high-end issues. There is a case, of course, for the experience in combat stress to be utilized more broadly in other uniformed services, and of course most recently in the NHS. Experiences of people working very intensively in ICUs with COVID patients, probably exclusively COVID patients, has taken its toll. And combat stress is in fact advising the NHS on this sort of thing, and combat stress as well provides treatment services to the NHS, primarily for military people with mental health challenges.
There is a whole range of services where people are in almost like constant contact with the negative sides of society. I'm thinking of social workers, police officers, even people like the Samaritans. I've heard of people who work for the Samaritans having a form of PTSD. So I would think that the work that's been done by Combat Stress would be invaluable in helping support those agencies as well.
I would hope so.
So bringing it back to the personal, You've both served in the services. Jeff, you were in the Royal Navy, and Peter, you were in the Army, and you've been you work with combat stress, obviously. And Jeff, you've written in both your books, in Saxon Spain and now in Draca, there are people who have suffered extreme situation, physical trauma, which then has a mental trauma that hits them. Now, the theme of this episode is about how trauma can shape the story. Tell us a little bit about the particular trauma that you experienced, first of all? And the interesting thing for me is that even though, you know, you were in the Navy, this is something that happened quite separately from your military service.
When I was a young officer under training, I was in a very bad car crash. I was trapped in the wreckage, and it was quite mind-alteringly painful, and it went on for a long time. And by the time help arrived, three people had died, and I was pretty far gone. So my last memory from within the wreck was someone standing by me saying, "This one's dead too." And it was that sort of tends to be a fairly life-changing experience. But in terms of how this shaped writing, I think, first of all, I've so far written four books to the level where they've been accepted by an agent. It so happens that the two that are first out into publication happen to have an injured protagonist. So it's not something I always write about. It just so happens that that's the way it's come out and through publication. And secondly, Draka is not so much about PTSD per se. It's about a bunch of characters, three characters in particular, and the interplay between characters, one of whom has PTSD. So I wasn't writing a misery memoir. I don't think misery memoirs sell particularly well. And if all you wanted to do is say, I had this terrible experience and I want to tell the world about it, then you really turn people off fairly rapidly. But if you write a good story, if there's a plot and you want people to engage with the hero and wonder whether he's going to come out of this, you've got to make people empathize with the hero. They've got to, readers tend to accept that their hero can be flawed, but they really want that hero to win. And so he can't be too depressed all the time. So all I've done is taken a history that happened a long while ago and remembered my reactions in the years immediately after that incident and my recovery from that incident, and use that to inform how I shaped the character.
If one is writing a story that is going to be shaped by one's own trauma, do you think, there's no right answer to this perhaps, but do you think it's better to, I don't know, have a period of years maybe to somehow process that trauma so that there's a little bit of distance from it, and that if you don't do that, it'll undermine what you write or the quality of what you write?
I think you have to be able to distance yourself from it, because otherwise it becomes, you get too emotionally involved, and it does become, you put too much of yourself out there. And I think if you're writing fiction, as I do, then you need to be able to get people to believe in the character. And the character has all sorts of nuances that won't be you. So there'll be bits of you in there, but it shouldn't be all you. And I think good writing comes from... any writer is going to access three main sources. It's going to be a mixture of personal experience, and it's going to be research, and it's going to be imagination. Sometimes it's wild imagination. And if the reader can't see the join, then we've done our jobs as writers. So I think if you get too close and you try and write about it too soon, it might be cathartic, but it probably won't be a great book. That's my personal view.
We're just coming up to the end of part one of this episode of We'd Like a Word with Jeff Gudgeon and General Sir Peter Wall. We are all about stories. We'll be hearing some more stories from their time in the services. Some drawing back the curtain and some funny anecdotes, I'm hoping. So we'll see you in part two.